You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast. We all hope you had a wonderful Christmas, but it's time to dive right back into some Everton chat. And it's fair to say the last few days have been pretty eventful, to say the least. I'm your host, Adam Jones, today joined by a dream team of Dave Prentice, Sam Carroll, and Connor O'Neill to discuss COVID-19, fixture postponements, and to look at a win over Sheffield United, of course. But Dave, we'll start with the big news as things stand. 4 hours before kickoff yesterday, Everton's game against Manchester City was postponed thanks to a COVID outbreak within the away side squad. It came as a bit of a shock, didn't it?
I think that's an understatement. I mean, Everton very, very carefully tempered their language in their statements and described it as regretful, I think it was. I think it's far worse than that. I think it's quite disgraceful, to be perfectly honest. I'm going to caveat that with the fact that it probably was a good thing for us in the event. When you look at the squad of players that we had available, you look at the fact that it would have been our fourth game in 9 days. It was only 48 hours after another really tough game at Sheffield United. In the circumstances, yes, it probably, you know, sort of did us a favour. But we were ready and raring to go. Carlo Ancelotti had a team ready to go out. And Premier League teams had been told way back in September that matches would not be postponed because of outbreaks of COVID-19, provided that the teams concerned had at least 14 available footballers. Now, are the Premier League going to tell us that Manchester City, with all their riches and all their resources, don't have 14 available players? No, I'm sorry. I just don't think Manchester City fancied this game. I think they've had a lot of games in a short period of time as well. They have already had two high-profile players out with the effects of COVID-19, Kyle Walker and Gabriel Jesus. And we don't know who else is involved, which is why Everton have demanded full disclosure of all the conversations that were taking place. But what really sticks in the craw is that Everton weren't involved in these negotiations or these discussions. Everton were told 4 hours before kickoff, Man City have made a request, we've agreed to it, you're not going to be playing your game. That's wrong. Whilst accepting that it probably was in Everton's favour, I still think that it was wrong the way in which it came about. And I'm left with an unsettled feeling about the whole situation. Something doesn't feel quite right about it at all.
I think Conor Prenno's not the only one who feels, you know, a little bit unsettled by the whole situation. I think looking at social media last night, most of the messages that I was seeing were saying, yeah, you know, if there is a COVID outbreak, then Everton fans completely agree with the decision itself to postpone the game, because obviously health and safety is paramount at this point. But as Everton's statement kind of suggests, it's a lack of transparency that seems to be not sitting right with a lot of people, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems very, you know, cloak and dagger, doesn't it? Very, it's been underhand tactics in the way it's been done. For it to kind of just come about that it was postponed at 4 o'clock, and there was seemingly discussions being taken place well before that 4 o'clock deadline yesterday. And there was one report last night which said that City actually requested postponement in the morning and it was declined. And then it was eventually postponed at 4 o'clock. Now, if that's the case, then Everton should have been well aware of. If City have gone to the Premier League on Monday morning and said, we don't think we can play this game tonight, Everton should have been made aware then, not 4 hours before kickoff, basically told that there's no game. And I think that's what leaves the sour taste in everyone's mouth, because I don't think, like you say there, Adam, I don't think anyone's got an issue with the health and safety and the well-being. I mean, let's face it, you know, people's lives are far more important than any football match taking place at any time, anywhere. But it's the way it's being done, and it's the kind of underhand tactics that have seemingly took place for the postponement to be made. And while Everton probably will benefit, they have every right to be aggrieved, because, you know, there's a strong possibility that yesterday was probably the last chance some fans might get inside Goodison for a number of weeks. You know, with the tier review coming on Wednesday, there's, you know, if Liverpool's moved up to one tier, then that's the end of fans being a game. So you know, the club probably got every right to feel aggrieved, and you know, there does need to be some disclosure, because like Daniel said, the rules around the Premier League COVID postponements, they seem mixed. You see the Newcastle Aston Villa game that got called off 4 days before it was due to take place. This one, 4 hours. Something somewhere just doesn't add up. And, you know, once again, it's mixed messages from the Premier League, and it leaves everyone in limbo.
Mm. I think Connor raises a good point there, Sam. You know, this is the second Premier League game that's been postponed due to COVID reasons. Obviously, Newcastle versus Aston Villa at the start of this month was the first one, and they kind of set their precedent there. But in that situation, it seemed as if there was a lot more communication between all three parties, as in like both clubs and the Premier League, whereas it seems in this situation, Everton have seemed distinctly out of the loop.
Yeah, I think with no Gav Buchland, I'm going to be the Gav Buchland. I'm going to be the dissenting voice on all this. In that, it doesn't really bother me too much in that, you know, that the Premier League had a decision to make, and that was the one they made. And I think that, you know, if we put the shoe on the other foot, if Ancelotti and, you know, the powers that be at Everton were asking the Premier League 4 hours before kickoff, you know, we think it's best that this game doesn't go ahead in these kind of unusual times. If that's what they believe, you know, as fans, we'd obviously agree with them, and we'd want the game off as well. The fact that it was on the other foot works for us this time. You know, I might not be saying this if we would have had James and Allen and Dean and Richarlison absolutely ready to go, but the fact that it's been the only downside, and I think what you wrote in your piece yesterday after it was, is about the supporters not being able to go. But you know, we're all Evertonians here, and we all know Evertonians would those 2,000 people swap going the game to get 3 points behind closed doors in January or February when we're pushing for the title or for the Champions League place? Of course they would. So I think it's just difficult, and to be honest, I feel sorry for everyone involved. You know, if Everton generally wanted, if Carlo and the lads were buzzing for that game last night, then that's tough. You know, obviously anyone who had a ticket was, you know, and probably as well, people at 4 o'clock were probably booked in at the pub, or, you know, if you're travelling a long way, might have set off, which is the desperately disappointing side. But I generally think it can only benefit Everton to play them when we have a full strength team, and I don't think City will be up for that when they come back. And I just think that what is the point in risking it? Do you know what I mean? If they did end up cobbling a team together and sent it, and then one lad add in and spread it, you know what I mean, and it goes to our team, then it's just absolutely not worth it at this point. So as disappointing as it was, I think that we have the upper hand on City now, and you know, it's meant that our December has been not even a success, is it? It's one of the best months of being an Evertonian I can remember in the last few years. So it's all good from my end. It's all good. Gavin Buchan signing out.
Gavin is never ever that positive, by the way. No, it's just the suspicion that City have had the game called off because they've got, you know, so two or three first team players suffering from COVID, and it affects the quality of the team that they can put onto the pitch, rather than, you know, the possibility of spreading.
It's a mutual agreement then. We're in the exact same position, aren't we?
But it's not mutual. Everton were willing to play the game, even though it was 46 hours since we've last played a match, and we had five first choice players correctly, you know, out injured. We had, I would suggest, more right to ask the Premier League to postpone the game, given those circumstances. And we've been here before. You know, we had that game where we had to go to Tottenham, was it, in a League Cup tie, 48 hours after we played Bolton on a Sunday. And David Moyes requested a postponement. And, you know, the powers that be said, no, I'm sorry, you've got to fulfil the fixture. Surprise, surprise, we lost 2-0. Same situation now. You know, I think we had more right to call for this game to be postponed, given our circumstances, than City did. Which is why they've asked for full disclosure, saying, well, really, you've got that bad a case of COVID in the camp? Well, can we know exactly which players are affected? And yeah. I suspect we'll never find out, we'll never actually see the paperwork that underlines which players are being missing. But yeah, I totally agree with you that it probably does us a favour, which I said at the outset. It was just a suspicion that it suited City far more.
I like that Everton have came out publicly already and said, we are going to ask the Premier League for answers. I kind of like that side of us.
Yeah,
and I also think that, you know, where you might say Everton, of course, were willing to play the fixture because, you know, good on Carlo. He hasn't really, I can't remember, he might have, but I can't remember a time when he's moaned about the injuries or used the injuries as an excuse. He hasn't done that. But for me, when he got told by, you know, Denise or Marcelo, whoever's told him this game's off yesterday, that I reckon Carlo might have just cracked open a nice bottle of Italian wine and thought this ultimately should, you know, willing to play the fixer is different to maybe thinking, hang on, we've got a chance to beat these here tonight, which could be the case. So it is, I think we've pretty much summed it up between us. It is disappointing slightly how it happened, but I think Everton will be the happier of the two. And did you say we've only got, is it one Premier League game between now and January the 12th?
Yeah.
And is that with the FA Cup game before that?
Yeah, the FA Cup game's on the 9th.
So that's just absolutely, you know, Carlo was always going to rotate, I think, for that Rotherham game anyway. So, you know, middle of January, when other teams might be feeling the pinch a little bit, you'd like to think that we're going to be firing on all cylinders. Alan could potentially be around a return, Jabaman and Dean at the end of the month as well. So I think, support to the side, it's worked out all right.
I think, Connor, though, to use the typical Phil Kiprad phrase and play devil's advocate, does this actually benefit Man City? Because we're now going to have to reschedule this game. Who knows when we're going to be able to reschedule it for? Because they've already got a game from the start of the season that they still need to play. If they progress in the League Cup, then they're going to have another fixture that they're going to need to fit in, along with Champions League fixtures that they're still in. They'll be in the FA Cup as well, depending on how well they progress in that. They'll have more fixtures. It could get to the scenario where Man City have to play, let's say, a Saturday, Tuesday, Friday, Monday, essentially, to try and fit this game in. So in the long run, does this actually benefit Man City at all?
No, I don't think it does in the long run. I think it does in the short term, in terms of they probably not fancy coming to Goodison last night with a bit of a weakened team, you know, undercooked, facing an Everton side that's, you know, got real momentum behind them. Because since themselves have had a stop-start season, haven't they? They've not really found momentum. I know they had a good win against Newcastle on Boxing Day, but they've been quite stop-start this season, quite not really looked the same as that we've seen in the last couple of years. So I think in the short term, yes, they probably thought, well, you know, we're not going to Goodison, kind of up against it. You know, just give them a bit of time to get the likes of Jesus and Kyle Walker, you know, who've tested positive for COVID back. But I think long term, it could shoot them in the foot, because, like you say there, where are they going to play the game? How, you know, where are they going to put the fixture in? And it'll be interesting what the Premier League do, you know, because, you know, they were quite keen as well at the start of the season that fixtures, outstanding fixtures, got put in quite quick in order for the competition to be, you know, remain quite a level playing field in terms of, you know, not too many clubs got cut short in terms of postponed games, etc. So it'll be interesting now where how they look to get the fixture and where they look to get the fixture in, because, you know, ideally you probably want to play before the end of January. If you're the Premier League, in terms of make sure that everyone kind of stays on an even playing field in terms of the number of games that they've played. So I think short term they probably benefited by the game not being on, but no, definitely long term, you know, who knows when it's going to be played now. And hopefully, you know, by the time it does come round, they will be in the midst of, you know, Champions League, Carabao Cup games, and you know, it'll be a tough test for them to come to Goodison on the back of a strong run of games.
And Preno, obviously, you know, a lot of fans have mentioned how good it will be for the players to have a little bit of a rest before that West Ham game. But if you were one of the players who was in the squad, you know, you probably would have been right in the middle of your pre-match preparations. You could have been having your pre-match meal, probably all together in the hotel, getting ready for this game. How would you have felt knowing, you know, 4 hours before kickoff, you're not going to be stepping out onto that pitch?
Yeah, I was thinking about this before when I was in the car, because obviously Everton consume all my waking thoughts. And, I was just thinking that the real losers in this situation are the likes of Bernard, you know, so Cenk Tosun, Jared Branthwaite, you know, so players that probably would have got some kind of run out in that match. Because literally 46 hours after we've just had a really tough, hard-fought game against Sheffield United, we're facing another team that keeps the ball really, really well and makes you run. So, you know, you would have seen changes galore, and you would have seen players given an opportunity to show to Carlo, you know, sort of what they're capable of doing. And you'd imagine they'd be prepared. Like you say, they'd have had the pre-match meal, they're focused mentally. And just that letdown to know that, well, West Ham on New Year's Day, you know, that's a proper period of time now to prepare for that game. Carlo's almost certainly going to go to a similar team that started against Sheffield United. In other words, his first choice starting lineup. And the only real opportunity those players are probably going to get now is likely to be against Rotherham, you know, so in the FA Cup. So, yeah, they're going to feel frustrated, you know, so deeply so. But that's just the nature of the beast, unfortunately. You know, there's not a great deal you can do about it. You just got to make sure that you're up and ready. But, you know, so when Carlo does give you the nod this time against Rotherham, you're going to take your chance again. But yeah, I thought that there's a number of players there that are going to be quite frustrated and, you know, so really, really disappointed that game, you know, so hasn't been played.
Sam, I think Premier raises a good point about Bernard there, and in particular, you know, he came off the bench against Sheffield United and looked really good for the 40 or so minutes that he got in that game. Richarlison would have been out for this Man City game, so you'd expect that Bernard probably would have started this one. It would have been a real chance for him in front of the crowd at Goodison, wouldn't it? But, you know, by the time this West Ham game comes around, Richarlison's going to be back and he's going to start, isn't he?
Yeah. But I think both in the Premier mentioned, I think Cenk Tosun, the last 12 months, must have, like, kicked a black cat on a Ouija board when he's on Indian gravestone or something like that. Like, you know, his big chance probably been in the house with his kit on and everything. I can't wait to play tonight. Seeing the announcement. So, obviously, tough on Cenk. And obviously, with his interview, you know, whatever you think about Cenk Tosun, if he would have been given an opportunity, then it is difficult for him. But Bernard, I thought it was a ruthless change from Carlo Ancelotti, wasn't it? And he done it against Manchester United with Andre Gomez as well, so there was a precedent for it. But I don't even think Anthony Gordon had a bad game, had he? I think it was just a difficult night and difficult conditions, and a lot of our play went down the right instead of the left. But it was an inspired change in the end, because I don't think there's many players in the team who've got that football brain to do that little touch that Bernard did to Decore and execute it the way he did. So I was quite excited to see what Bernard could offer, because can anyone remember the last time he influenced the game starting it? And that's difficult, isn't it?
To be fair, against Manchester United when he scored.
Well, yeah.
That was probably one of the best games of the season.
And then disappeared from the start of 11 again. And he's kind of... It's changed a lot for Bernard, hasn't it? From when he first signed and people were like, he's great. And he did have a good little burst of form when he first kind of got to full fitness under Marco Silva. But now, probably if you kind of polled Everton fans on, you know, if a reasonable bid came in for him, I think some people might just say, make a profit. He was a free agent, wasn't he? Which, you know, the club would do if they decided to take that action. But there's definitely a player there, which we've seen. So, I don't know. I still think he'll get his chance, won't he? And there's going to be FA Cup matches, which hopefully we progress in. And I'm sure he'll play in those. But I think out of all the Everton players at the moment, Bernard probably is the most interesting one to kind of gauge his situation, isn't it? And where he kind of stands in the thinking of Ancelotti. I mean, you know, a full Brazilian international probably won't have been too happy to see a teenage lad stand ahead of him in that Sheffield United game when, you know, he came on against United and stuff. But yeah, difficult for him, difficult for Cenk Tosun, difficult for anyone who maybe, you know, Ancelotti had put their arm round in the week and after the Sheffield United game and said, look, you're playing on Boxing Day the 28th, to not get that chance. But look, it's a long season, isn't it? There's a lot of football to be played. They will all get more chances again. And I think definitely with Bernard, I think him and Andre Gomez both showed when they came on, I think that they had a little bit of a point to prove. I thought that was the best I've seen Gomez in a while, even if it was just for 20 minutes or so that he was on the pitch. And it was the same for Bernard. He looked lively. He had that lovely touch for the goal, which was I was taken aback by. So hopefully we see that now. You know, if you want to stay at this Everton team playing under Carlo Ancelotti, you know, you've got to start pulling your finger out and affecting matches, and hopefully that's what they'll start to do.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Does bring us neatly onto that Boxing Day game, Preno. 1-0 win over Sheffield United. It was a bit of a frustrating game at times, but it was one where Everton just ground out the victory, and that was the real important thing at the end of the day, wasn't it?
Well, regular listeners to the Royal Blue Podcast will know that's exactly what I predicted. And as you know, I always
I'd like to say if I was on the podcast, I would have also predicted a 1-0.
Yeah, well, you know, so great minds think alike and all that. Yeah. No, it was a very, very important win. That was the most, you know, significant factor. Having, you know, had the experience with it against Manchester United, it was a game that in the League Cup, it was a game that we needed to win. Just to, you know, restore a little bit of momentum. And it was a game that we'd be expected to win because of Sheffield United's results this season, but they're not as bad as their results portray. I've said that quite a lot of times. I mean, they struggle to score. You know, so that's their big problem. But they work relentlessly. They put a real shift in for their manager every single game, and they make life very, very difficult. Then they've got this mad record of what have they lost this season? Is it like, you know, so 13 of 15 games, something like that. And like 75% of them have been by one goal. You know, they've been so unfortunate in a number of matches. I mean, they gave Manchester City a really, really tough game at Bramall Lane. So it was going to be a really tough evening for us, but a game that we really needed to win. So we did, because we were organised, because we were defensively, you know, resilient. And we had that little touch of magic when it mattered most. And as you already mentioned, I mean, the build-up to that goal was so good. The touch from Bernard, the layout from Decore. And Sigurdsson, he made what was a difficult chance look easy, just with a great touch and a great finish. So that's what you want from players like that. And that's why we spent such a lot of money on Gylfi Sigurdsson, you know, so all those years ago. So it was massively important that we got those 3 points, and we did. And as we've already said, you know, the game being postponed last night means that, you know, maybe that's a blessing in disguise. We've got a proper period now to build for what is another very, very tough game on New Year's Day. But momentum's back again now, and you know, so we are in the top four where we'd like to be. Whether we stay there, who knows? But I just think that was a massively important result. Performance wasn't great, okay, but you know, it was always going to be a tough game. But the result was all, and we did it on the night. So yeah, you know, so celebrations all around. I had a toast on Boxing Night, just to enjoy that moment.
I think Connor on Gylfi Sigurdsson, you know, he's had a fair few critics over the last few months, but I'd say over the course of December, he's really stepped up. Would you argue he's been arguably one of Everton's most improved players over the last month?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's kind of, he's become that kind of leader, that senior figure that people hoped he would be when he first joined the club. I think, you know, you look at, you know, we've had injury problems and we've lost a lot of key players this month, but he's stepped up to the mark and he's really shown, you know, his class. Whether it be, you know, when playing in the number six role or the, you know, the eight role or the 10 role, he's performed, you know, to the levels that we hoped he would be performing for when he first joined the club. And now he seems to be showing that little bit of composure. You know, I think the difference as well in terms of, you know, you look at that finish on Boxing Day compared to the one at Burnley, you know, the end of November, was it, where, you know, he basically has the goal at his mercy and he just fight. The difference in his composure, the confidence that he must now have, it's clear for all to see. And I think a lot of that comes from the manager, because I think obviously, you know, the manager's put a bit of faith in him. He's trusted him. You know, he was captain of Everton. He was captain, wasn't he, on Boxing Night? He's put faith in him. And now Carlo's reaping the rewards of that, because he's really stepped up to the mark and, you know, probably say it a little bit quietly, but he's now probably one of the first names on the team. She's as things stand right now this minute, given Everton's midfield problems. And, you know, hopefully now he's set his benchmark and he's got to produce more like that on a regular basis and really become that senior, you know, authoritative figure in Everton's midfield.
I feel like we say it a lot with Sigurdsson, but is he benefiting from actually playing in his natural position at the minute?
It's just, I really think about Sigurdsson yesterday, and I think it is difficult, isn't it? Because he almost, I've given him a hard time myself, especially last season, but I do think that, you know, in his first season, you know, under two different managers, played the cross, you know, left mid, right mid, behind a striker, up front at one point in the Europa League by David Unsworth. He was decent, wasn't he? He was no worse than anyone else, certainly. In the second season, under Marco Silva, top scorer, joint with Richarlison. And this season, he's, especially in the last few games, he's been good. I think he almost gets that kind of Ashley Williams brush of, he's just had one season that was so bad and so out of character that, you know, I think some people do struggle to forgive him for some of the performances he turned in last season. But the more we're seeing now of him playing, at kind of the point of that midfield three, it does look like last season was just a case of a man who has been used to playing in attacking midfield for so long with not many defensive responsibilities that when he was put back there, he's just been a bit, hang on, what's going on here? And look, it's hard, isn't it? Because up until even 15 years ago, 10 years ago, if you could play centre mid, you could play holding mid, attacking mid, you know, it wasn't quite as niche the roles that you're asked to play as much sometimes, is it? You know, the way you have your Kante position and sixes and eights and stuff that, you know, is a lot more kind of modern terminology for Sigurdsson. But I think in the last 4 or 5 games, he started to ask a bit of a question of Everton, even the, you know, rewind 6 or 7 weeks. And I think his contract's up at the end of next season, isn't it? So we're now heading into the final 18 months of his contract. And I think some people probably would have been, you know, can we get rid of him in the summer? And ultimately, we still might have to because of the wages he's on, depending on whether you want to take the midfield. But he's now starting to turn in the performances where you think, hang on, you know, he's playing really, really well. And I think what impressed me against Sheffield United, he's so strong and he's got such a good first touch. You know, when he gets on the ball, just so composed and stuff. And I genuinely think he's brilliant against Sheffield United. So it'll be interesting. I think Ancelotti picked him out, didn't he? And personally called him out as someone he thinks that could go on to be a good manager after his career, which is quite interesting. So Ancelotti obviously respects him enough to say that, respects him enough to give him the armband at Everton, as Connor pointed out. So, yeah, I think that was right what Connor said. He set a benchmark for himself now, and he's got to carry that on because he does have competition. You know, Gomez looked good when he came on. What a performance from Tom Davies against Sheffield United. Tchouaméni's coming back. Fabian Delph won't want to come back and sit on the bench. So there's loads of competition if he doesn't keep doing it. But right now, definitely one of the first names on the team sheet. And he's changing opinions with that as well. It's just good to see, isn't it? Because I did think my main criticism last season was that, you know, he was playing an unfamiliar position. But sometimes just roll your sleeves up and get stuck in and have a go. And Evertonians will take that even if they can see that you're struggling a little bit. And I don't think he's done that. But this season, he's just doing exactly what Carlo Ancelotti is asking of him. And he's doing it with a little bit of fire in his belly as well.
Dan's just mentioned Tom Davies there, Preno. I think, personally, that was probably his best Everton performance in a long time, I think. You know, without Alan in the team, we needed Tom Davies to kind of step up and put in that sort of performance, didn't we?
I'm glad you jumped in there. If you hadn't, I was going to mention it myself anyway, because just saying that made me think that, hang on, we haven't really mentioned Tom Davies' performance yet at Sheffield United, and he was excellent. I wouldn't say, you know, surprising, because we know, you know, he's got that kind of quality in there. But he just looked like a really mature performance in that, you know, he wanted the ball all the time. He was driving forward with the ball. And I remember after 20 minutes just thinking, wow, you know, so he's made a great start here, you know, so let's hope that this can continue. And it reminds me, was it at Huddersfield a season or two ago where, again, he had a really good performance. He actually created the winning goal for Richarlison very early on in the game. Maybe it's that part of South Yorkshire that he particularly enjoys. But no, just it was a really, really good performance from him. And, you know, I was delighted for the lad, you know, because he does get a lot of flack sometimes from the Everton fan base, sometimes unfairly, well, always unfairly. And that becomes, that's largely because of, I don't know what it is, sometimes like the local lads seem to get it harder and always have done historically than players who are brought in for a transfer fee. I don't really know why that is. It's like a bit of a mad quirk amongst Evertonians sometimes. But the local lads, you know, sort of tend to get it a bit harder. And then obviously, you know, so because of his demeanour and his personality off the pitch, you know, so with his slightly, you know, so lively, you know, fashion sense and what have you, that tends to rub people up the wrong way as well. But, you know, we should really be judging him on what he does on a football pitch. And he looked great. He had a really, really good performance. And I hope he gets the opportunity to build on that now, you know, so over the next few games. Because, you know, signs finally that, you know, so yes, you know, so he's maturing and he's actually realising that potential that we all, you know, so know he has. Okay, it's only one game. Let's not get too carried away. But, you know, so it's a very, very good start. So, yeah, I was delighted to see that performance from him. And long may it continue.
I think talking about benchmarks, it's a similar one for Davies, isn't it? He set it there. And what I like about it, about that performance, was that, you know, even when things didn't come off, when there was a few passes he tried that didn't come off, 5 minutes later, he was back just dropping into that little pivot, wasn't he? And saying, yeah, give me the ball, and I'll go again. And we needed that night. And talking about the City game, he's probably another one. I think he was quite disappointed that game didn't go ahead because, you know, it's one thing to do it against bottom of the league, Sheffield United. It would have been good to see him carry that on against Manchester City. And I think, you know, talking about City, I think that's one of the reasons why he probably does get such a hard time, isn't it? Because to score a goal like he did against City all those seasons ago, so early on in your Everton career, it obviously does set quite a high benchmark. And, you know, he'd probably be one of the first to admit that at times he hasn't quite reached that for whatever reason. But, you know, the game against Sheffield United it shows what he can do and shows that maybe if we do play him a little bit deeper and give him a bit of scope to come short and get on the ball, that, you know, as Adam mentioned, he could really be the perfect replacement for Alan over the next, you know, 4 to 6 weeks or however long he's out the team for. But I think for him now it is just about finding that consistency and making sure those performances aren't every, you know, 5 or 6 games, but every, you know, doing that consistently every 3 or 4 weeks, you know, making sure that you stay on that level.
Sam's absolutely right there about the expectation level. You know, because he shone so brightly so very early on in his Everton career, that set, you know, an unfairly high benchmark. And we've seen it before. I mean, you know, I talked about local players and John Ebrill, who now obviously is a mentor to the younger players at the football club. But he came through the FA's School of Excellence when that was a new thing, when it was, you know, perceived as, you know, a vehicle to produce superstars of the future. And so people expected, you know, so far too, you know, so great things from John Ebrill, who was a very, very good servant for Everton and a very good footballer. But again, he was unfairly criticised at times because he never quite lived up to the expectation. It's the same with Tom, you know, so when he was it his debut against Norwich on the final day of the season, when, you know, so everybody was like focusing on, help me out now, Kieran, the left-footed lad. Kieran Dowell. Everybody thought that he was going to be the star of the future. And Tom Davis came in from left field and just like stole the show. And then, you know, kicked on the following season. Obviously, that goal against Manchester City was the thing that everybody thought, wow, you know, what have we got on our hands here? Whilst losing sight of the fact that at the time he was like 18, you know, so a young kid who's still, you know, learning his game. So, yeah, we need to just cut him a little bit of slack. But yeah, he performed really, really well. I hope he does get the opportunity to continue, though.
And Connor, there has long been a debate about what Tom Davis's best position is in the midfield and where he'd fit into the squad. Do you think that maybe that performance against Sheffield United proved that it should be, you know, that sitting role in front of the back four?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, he's in Tom Davis's defence, he's always been a little bit unlucky. I think he's been moved around, hasn't he, a little bit. You know, he's always been the four guy who kind of moves around and fills in for the team. But I think, you know, there's no better way to prove to a manager that you should be playing in a particular position by getting that position and you know, producing a high-class performance. That's what he exactly did on Boxing Night. And I think now he's got, you know, that evidence to kind of back it up and say to Carl Ancelotti, look, you know, this is my best position. This is where I should be playing. You know, this is where you'll get the most out of me. And I think, you know, it's always been suggested that that was his best position. But now, you know, we're finally seeing signs of Tom Davis actually having, you know, evidence on the pitch that it's his best position. And, you know, like the lads have said, now he's got to kind of, you know, kick on now and really cement his place in the Everton side and ultimately give Carlo Ancelotti food for thought, because I think, you know, we can all agree, you know, so far this year that the midfield when everyone's fit kind of picks itself and has picked itself. You know, Carlo's made very few changes there, but you know, performances like that from Tom Davis will certainly give him something to think about. And certainly think, you know, possibly that he might have a selection headache in that area of the pitch moving forward.
I suppose we've got to mention that defence again in that game against Sheffield United. No shots on target in the second half once again. You know, we're just looking so resolute at the back these days, aren't we?
I text Phil, obviously Phil Kirkbride was at Sheffield United, and on the final whistle, I just text him saying, how sexy is Yerry Mina? It's just, honestly, you know, you talk about sometimes players not looking themselves. I genuinely don't think the player that we had for the first, what was it? Two seasons is the same player. I just think at the moment his positioning, his distribution, everything about his game has just changed. I think he had a few ups and downs this season. I think Ancelotti called him out himself, didn't he, after the West Brom? And I was quite disappointed against Liverpool. There was that weak clearance, wasn't there? That let, obviously, a great finish, but let Salah score and put them back ahead. But since then, he's just kicked on. And I always thought there was a bit of a, when Keane and Mina were named in the same, you know, back two or centre back pair, and it almost felt they were too samey, a bit too static, flat footed, slow sometimes. But the two of them, I think on current form, are one of the best centre back pairs in the Premier League. I think Michael Keane right now should easily be starting for England. I think he's been absolutely. Michael Keane just puts confidence in you now, doesn't he? Those first couple of seasons when he was there, and a little bit like Mina, he'd make a mistake every few games, or, you know, if he got turned early on, he'd look like everything was moving at a million miles an hour. But now he's just composed. And then, you know, Ben Godfrey already, you can't say this often about lads who've played, what, 10 games, but already looking like a bargain at 20, 25 million. And Mason Holgate is just Mr. Dependable now. And I think Mason, probably out of the three of them, has gone under the radar the most, but he's a leader in this team. At, how old is he? 23, 24? Absolutely superb. And you know, you talk about pound for pound signings, obviously Calvert-Lewin would be up there, but again, you know, Mason Holgate for £1 million, I think he was a David Moyes signing as well, wasn't he? You know, what a parting gift that was. He's just turned out to be, I think, Holgate similar to Godfrey. I think he can play right back, left back, centre back, centre mid, as he showed last season, and he'll be excellent. So, you know, you look at them four, Pickford and Olsen's form starting to to come up a little bit as well. You've got Jared Branthwaite coming back into the team, Neil Zenkunku, Luka Dean's out injured, Seamus Coleman. This is the first time in probably my lifetime that I can remember Everton being so strong at the back, and it's just boss to see, isn't it? But Mina and Keane, whether it's Ancelotti, whether it's just kind of getting to grips with Everton and the Premier League and England in Mina's case, I don't know, but I just absolutely love them two at the moment. I think they're the two of our best players.
Mm. I know Seamus Coleman's fit now, club captain, starting right back. Does he get back into this team with Mason Holgate playing this well?
No. And I genuinely think that we may have stumbled across a long-term replacement for Seamus Coleman. And I'm thinking more about Ben Godfrey because he's like been absolutely magnificent as an emergency left back. And I know he's a centre back, and that's where he was signed for long term. But he has played, you know, emergency right back here for Norwich before and done very, very well there and told the manager he feels comfortable there. And just the way that he's matured and that he's flourished makes me think that he could be, you know, so an unexpected long-term option to replace Seamus Coleman, you know, so when we actually, you know, finally have to, you know, so part ways with Seamus. But at the moment, I mean, Seamus has not quite got back into the pace of the game yet. And Holgate just hasn't put a foot wrong. He's been absolutely great. He's been so assured and so sensible. Very different in terms of Seamus in that, you know, he doesn't offer the attacking thrust and penetration that Seamus would ask or would offer. But he's better defensively. And that's what we're building on at the moment. You know, so we're building a platform by keeping clean sheets and by stopping teams getting shots, certainly in the second half of matches. And we never thought we'd say that, you know, so prior to, you know, the Christmas period of games when we were conceding, you know, a couple of goals every game and not having kept a clean sheet since the opening day. So, you know, absolutely, you know, so real salute to all those players, you know, so Mason Holgate especially. But, you know, to echo what Sam said, yeah, it's looking pretty good at the moment in terms of, you know, so the defensive setup looks consistent. It looks solid. And you've got like a little bit of reassurance in those players now as well. And if you're not conceding goals, you know, the likelihood is you're not going to lose matches and you've got a greater opportunity of winning games. So, yeah, it's been a platform that, you know, we hope we can build on for the rest of the season.
Mm. And Connor, this time last month, who'd have thought that we'd have all been loving Ben Godfrey bulldozing his way down the left flank? He's just incredible, isn't he? He's a physical specimen. He's great with his... with the ball at his feet, his positioning's amazing. Like he, as Prenno says, he hasn't really put a foot wrong, has he?
No, he hasn't. And I think, you know, you can see now why the club wants to sign him so much in the summer. I think, you know, certainly yourself, there was a few raised eyebrows when we kind of went in with that, with the offer, and we were keen to sign him because everyone was kind of looking around to go, you know, we've got good defensive options. Why are we looking at the defender? But you can honestly now see why the club, you know, was so keen on signing him, because he looks an absolute talent and he's getting better and better week by week. And, you know, he's just took to Everton and playing for Everton like a duck to water, as Dean, I pronounced it there. He's playing at left back, not even his natural position. And yet he's just, you know, striding up the pitch like it's nothing. And I think, you know, you look now, it's the back four going to, well, back what Sam was saying earlier, for the first time, I think, in a long time, there's genuine competition there now. And I think, you know, even like Luka Dean got injured, everyone would have presumed, well, he'll just walk straight back into the team when he's back fit. Ben Godfrey playing there right now, this means that's not a given no more. You know, that he might have to sit on the bench and watch Godfrey play left back for a couple of games. And I think that's the big thing right now, is that there is competition. And Carl's also shown as well, you look at his team selections this year, if they kind of do make a mistake or the performance is up to scratch, they get dropped. They're not there. I mean, you look at Man United, at home, Mason Holgate was brought straight back in. I think he was given the captain's armband. Didn't really have a great afternoon up against Marcus Rashford, or, you know, by his own standards, he was quite poor. You know, the next game, he wasn't even in the squad. So I think, you know, that type of competition keeps people on their toes. And I think, you know, Everton ultimately the benefit from having a bit of squad depth and, you know, a world-class manager who's putting people in the right positions and installing belief in them.
Mm-hmm. Well, fingers crossed we can keep that defensive solidity going into the West Ham game on New Year's Day. We'll be back later in the week to discuss that game, of course, and hopefully be talking about another Everton win to kick off 2021 in the right fashion. Don't forget, you can rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts from, and you can join in the conversation on Facebook and Twitter as well. You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.